Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tone Irish podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined as always by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Sean is on the old production. Hi, Sean.
Not too bad. What are you getting
out? Padraig is on the couch. Hi, Padraig. And Gary Skynor is our guest today. How are you, Gary?
Hello, everyone. That is a wave, by the way.
Because you're a thalidomide survivor and you're from Liverpool.
Yes.
So tell us, what is thalidomide?
Thalidomide, surprisingly, most people under the age of 40 don't seem to know about it, including medics. Thalidomide was a drug that was administered back in 1959, 60, 61, and 62, was taken off the market in August 63, when it was proven to be causing mass deformities in newborn babies. It was prescribed to expectant women for morning sickness, and nobody had a clue that this drug was doing this, you know. Anyway, it became apparent that it was the culprit, and they immediately pulled it off the shelves. And after 10,000 babies worldwide had died, and in the UK, there was 505 of us born, made the journey. That figure now stands at 401 from 505. Some of them have been natural suicides. Some have been suicides by over-indulging in alcohol. Illicit drugs, and the others have been, like, sadly, the likes of hanging or throwing themselves off a bridge or a tall building or whatever. And unless you suffer from it, it's weird. It's because if I go to Florida, if I go to Disney World, while I'm there, I'm a bigger attraction than Mickey Mouse. But the kids are all like,
yeah,
he's going on, hey, how are you doing? And I go, never mind you, what's happened to him? You know? And it's them glares and stares. Doesn't affect me. Affecting me mum more than me. Affects me girlfriend more than me. For me, like, I'm used to it, you know. I've had 63 years of people going, proper gawking. Not just like the odd, you know, proper, like, up and down.
How was that? How was it growing up in school? You know, kids can, they're not aware of their mouths and what they say as a young age, you know. How was that for you? Was it a difficult experience?
It's all kinds of names, spaz, short arms, how would you wipe your ass, Skippy, the bush kangaroo, because my arms are up here. And I used to just go, and that was it, you know. I kicked them up the arse, the school bully.
Yeah,
I'd get a good kicking from me and I'd get battered. I mean, I must have gone through 3 pairs of pants a week, getting dragged down the playground. But my ma always said, you know, you've got a good head, you've got a good pair of legs, give as good as you get. And so I didn't get pampered from that point of view. But psychologically, it hurts. Of course it hurts, you know.
And how did you deal with it psychologically back then? And how were you dealing with it? Yeah.
I thought I dealt with it really well until 2011, when for some reason or other, just a number of things happened on one particular day. And I can't even put into words what it was. It was like there wasn't much making the diary. Me and my ex-wife were battling like mad. the kids were at me, they were on my case. There was about six or seven things happened on this particular day. And I drove out the house and I went to Morrison's, which is a big superstore in England. And I just bought 40 paracetamol, took them in the car, and took the overdose on Southport Beach. And the police were looking for us and all that. And that was the first time, well, when I had to go and see my doctor after I was released by the psychiatrist, he said to me, Kuki said, excuse me, I'm dying of cold, man flu. Dr. Kuki, who's known me like most of my life, you know what I mean? And he went, are we all right saying the exact words on here, yeah?
Yeah.
Go ahead, say what you want.
And he went, you fucking get in here. And I said, what? And he went, fucking get in here now. So I went, what? And he got me medical records and he threw them on the fucking desk and he went, what the fuck's that? And I went, what? And he went, being admitted for an overdose, you, the most positive person, like, fucking no, you. And I went, and then he realised then, you know, he must have thought, fucking hell, I'm going to want to add to his grief.
Mm.
And he just said to me, Gary, honest, if I was a betting man, the last person in this surgery I look after, thinking they would take an overdose, would be you. And that's why it's a massive shock. So I said, so why? So he said, well, you're like a boxer. He said, you've gone for the last 53 years of getting bang, 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 and jumping up off the canvas. And every one of them has took its toll. And on this particular day, a number of them have gone.
Yeah.
And it's been too much. You couldn't get off the floor, and that was it. And I thought that was a great way of summing it up.
Yeah. Do you know when you were younger in Liverpool, obviously famous for football, among other things, were you able to participate in sports?
Do it.
Were you able to participate in sports when you were a young lad?
Mad on football. Mad Liverpool fan. Become great friends with the late great Bill Shankly. He was, in fact, I run my own street team when I was 14, and a paper called the Catholic Pictorial done a feature on me, a kid of 14 running his own school team, his street team, with school kids in, and Bill Shankly, she was doing a story on him. So she said, "What do you do for the strip?" So I said, well, we all bring our own socks and shorts, but we've got a set of amber shirts. So with it being Liverpool and Everton, half the lads would turn up with white socks and white shorts, and half the lads would turn up with red socks and red shorts, and we'd all have an amber shirt on the same shirt. Mm. So she told Shanks, and the day before we played Stoke City in 1972, that it was the game the day after the Corbin Banks lost his eye in a car crash.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember it really, really well, you know. And I thought he was just going to ground for tickets. And I'm sitting in the car as she got out. She went, come on. I went, what? This is like 11 o'clock on a Saturday. Come on. And I went, what do you mean, come on? She went, come in with me. And I went, all right. She doesn't want me sitting in the car on my own.
Mm.
I went, and he come down the stairs. Hello, son. You must be Gary. Hello. Oh, yes, son, you're on your own team. I took us into this, like, fucking mortuary. And I had, like, fucking cabinet, big grey cabinets with all, like, heated fucking rollers inside them. And all the strips were all folded fucking grey, you know. Not like now where they're all hung up on the fucking thing. Because nobody had names on the back of the shirts then.
Yeah.
And he went, right, son, let me see what I can do for you here. And he went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 18 shirts, 18 shorts. He didn't spare the socks. He says, and treat them well, son. They've got a fucking big bin bag. Put them in the bin bag. And I was like, fucking hell, is this happening to me, you know? 14-year-old kid. So we all had our fucking sleeves rolled up. We're like, some of the lads, big lads, I've always been a big lad, fat bastard now. And, but it was amazing to get that. And then I spent most of my life in Alderley Hospital in Liverpool, having operations on my fingers for them to be separated. And I've got plastic radius in both arms. And across the road, Eaton Road, was where... So you've got like Alderley Hospital here. Eton Road's the main road, and if you go like half a mile, Everton's training ground is there. So right in front of Everton's training ground is Bill Shankly's house. He actually backs on. If you climbed over his wall, his back garden wall, you'd be in Belfield and Everton's old training ground, you know. And I've gone in, my main first job as a kid, used to go in the cake shop, and they had women and say, here he is now. And I'm always laughing and joking with the women, you know. Four jelly creams, two sausage rolls, custard cream and all that. And then this old woman was stood there and she went, this is one of your Bill's mob. To me, to her. And I went, who is she? And he went, who is she? I went, who is she? I said, that's Mrs. Shankly. I said, your husband has done me the biggest favour, you know. Oh, she said, you must come up the house and have a cup of tea. And 2 days later, I've gone up the house at dinner time. She brought me a sausage roll, cup of tea. I'm in fucking Shankly's house. And you could smell the soap upstairs, and he'd come down the stairs. He'd left Liverpool, he's tired.
Yeah.
Had a pair of red tracky bottoms on with a white stripe and a white string vest. And he went, hello, son. I hope you're keeping that good, son. Washing it regular. And I'm like, fuck him, hell. Not like this man's a fucking god, isn't he? And I'm sitting in his house, you know. So,
yeah.
And I loved football. I was a very good footballer. I played out in Spain and Germany and France, Italy. For Unity Boys Club, and I passed my coaching badge, qualified Class 1 referee. I am still to date the most successful amateur football manager in Liverpool Sunday League history.
Where?
The Business House League has got 6 divisions. So 5 and 4 play for the Minor Cup. 3 and 2 play for the Junior Cup. And 1 and Premiership play for the Senior Cup, you know, for the Premier Cup, Senior Cup it was called. Now, no team since the league started in 1924, I think it was, has ever won them 3 trophies. So, like Merseyside Police, who had a team, didn't win it in 1988 and then win it again in 92. Or, you know, the Junior Cup in 92 and then win the Senior Cup 5 years later. Nobody's ever done that. Mm. But I didn't just do that. I won the fucking 3 of them in succession.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So 3 years on the run. Because we got promoted, you know, we battered everyone in the 5th division. So they moved us up a division because it was a fucking waste of time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So they put us into the 3rd division. We fucking battered everyone in the fucking 3rd division, 2nd division, for the cup. And then they put us in the 1st division and then we won the fucking cup against, we were in the 1st division when we won the Senior Cup, if you know what I mean. Mm. And it was like being the talk of the town, you know, people saying, who the fuck's it? You know what I mean? You wouldn't think he'd be able to fucking do much.
Yeah.
But I'd put the goals up myself, you know, I'd fucking, I'd be there slotting them up on the grass. I'd have them all set up so when the lads come, they just pick them up and
stuff
them in the ground and all that.
What was it like then? So sport is a big part of your life. What was it like being a teenager growing up with girls and socialising and stuff like that? Was it difficult? What was it like for you when you were a teenager with girls, you know, when you're in the dating scene and stuff like that?
A funny story about that, about girls. My mate Jimmy used to do all the doors and all this. And we'd go on the ale and then go to town, go to a club. And this Thalidomide girl, massive pair of tits on, you know. And a fucking mate was like, fucking look gorgeous, you know. So he went and said, I fucking get her up with the big tits. I went, fuck off, I'm not getting her up. I went, why is this fucking size of her arms? And he went, you for fucking need. I went, fuck off, you get her up, I'll get a fucking mate up. So, but we don't reckon we know. I've had like 29 relationships, some of them outside of my little affairs, but it's documented in the book anyway, and an affair that I had that, you know, I wished it had worked out better
than
it did. But I've never, I think if you got the gift of the gab,
yeah,
you can look like fucking Quasimodo, you know,
yeah,
and still get a shark, you can still get.
You still have the bit of charisma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you've got that, how many fucking muscle mutts are out there who can't put two words together?
I know.
Who, you know, think like the idea of a bird's night out is to go for a fucking walk or sit in the house and, you know, do you want someone who's got a little bit of vision, a little bit of, and if they can get over this, the way I look, you know, I used to make jokes about it and all that. I used to have sitting in a pub there one night and said to her, "Aren't you embarrassed about going out with me?" And she said, "This is a joke." Like, I said, "Aren't you embarrassed going out with me?" She said, "Not really." She said, "The only thing that upsets me is everyone knows who puts it in." You know what I mean?
Yeah. But what were you doing then for money? Like, were you working? What kind of jobs did you have?
Fucking hell. I've had about 16 jobs since I left school. I've been, my first job was, I worked at Alderay Hospital on the switchboard. As I said, that's how we met Mrs. Shankly. And then I went from there to join the fire brigade, on the switchboard.
Yeah.
Then I left there and I went to City Council, their main switchboard. And then I moved from there and I went on security on a big building, government building. I say security, walking around, checking everything's okay.
Yeah.
Logging stuff. And then I worked for the messenger service and I was just a fucking, these jobs were for people who can't fucking do anything. You know what I mean? I went, fuck this, I've got to get out of this.
Not challenging enough, feel like.
No, you know. I mean, mate, on a Thursday night, I used to do disco. My mate used to help me with the records. His dad had a welding firm. And he said, "You could weld." I went, "Don't talk to you fucking ass. How can I weld?" And he went, "My dad will get all the gear adapted for you." I said, "Fuck off." And we did. We got all the gear adapted. And I ended up getting overcome with fumes in Holyhead in Anglesey. And again, I went for the chest x-rays and everything. And my doctor said, "Fucking hell, what job are you doing? Are you smoking now?" I said, "Never touched a cigarette in my life." And he said, "Well, your chest, you got the chest of a fucking 90-year-old man, why?" I said, "Because I'm welding." And he went, "You, how the fuck are you weld?" But this fella used to knock from BOC, you know, the oxygen police. He'd knock at 11 o'clock at night with like fucking crutches. And he'd put like a fucking set of pliers on the end of the crutch and run the welding lead right through the centre of the crutch and keep the handle on the crutch like that. And I went to him. I said, "Number one, I said, have you ever fucking welded yourself?" And he went, "No." I said, "Well, it's like writing with a pen. As you try and put an extension on a pen and write legibly, you couldn't. You can't.
Yeah.
You've got to be like close up and feel the pen, you know. So you got to feel the weld." I said, "And secondly, I look like fucking Robocop." I was like, I had fucking leads all over me and everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, because of me chest, we had to leave that. And then I worked for social services. And because I've got a clerical background, obviously, we all had six people with learning difficulties to look after. And so there were six of us. And all six of us had five or six people to look after. Now I'm finding myself now, they come in and go, "I've heard the police have been to the house, the bailiff's been." I'm going, "Yeah, give us in." And I'd be on the phone all day, sorting the problems out. Next thing, I'd be suited and booted. And I'd be going down to magistrate's court and putting their case for them. And in the meantime, all my colleagues are all jumping on fucking bus trips, going to Chester Zoo and all that. And I've got this fucking caseload like that. And I'm in the magistrate's court and the Crown Court and the county court. So I thought, fuck this, I may as well get a solicitor's firm in to take over, you know. So I got the solicitor's firm in, the girl who come in, said to her, "Who's done these files?" I said, "Me." So she went, "You could earn a fortune for the lawyer." She said, "Why don't you take it up?" And I went, "Fuck off." And she went, "No." She said, "It's brilliant the way you've set it all out and everything else." So next thing is, I wrote to like 14 firms out the Yellow Pages, and every one of them offered me a job at TV. You know, and said, like, because you used to get the informed legal advice, which is worth £92 each claim. So if you come through my door and you were on benefits, I could get £92 times three for you and for you.
Mm.
Right? So I was like king of the green forms, you know. And so then I had other firms fucking head on me because everyone fucking knew me because of the stand-up comedy, of the way you look, the football. So
when did you get into comedy? Was that always a thing? Like, did you always have a bit of wit? Like, obviously you always had a bit of wit, but when did you actually start doing stand-up?
86. Went on holiday to Ibiza, and I used to be, I could carry maybe 7 or 8 bottles on a tray, ale. I'd go, come back, and then I'd keep the ball up on me fucking knees and all on the beach. And we'd be sitting on the beds, and everyone around would come and fucking have a laugh with us with all the lads, you know. And I've gone to get the ale, and this fella's sat with, I asked him, does he do that professionally? I said, no, he's just a fucking knobhead, you know. So he said, he's fucking wasting his time, you know. So when I've come back to the company, they've said, do you want us to put you on stage in Liverpool? And he set it up. I did this United Services Club. Fucking hell. You know, like, not knowing how it goes properly.
Mm.
So you've got, like, a age group mixed, female and male, and I've gone in and I've just done what I fucking do in the pub. And, like, all the old ones got up and fucked off and, you know, yeah, swearing and all that. And then I come off, I was really down over it, you know, I went. Anyway, this mate of mine, Eddie, he said to me, look, you've got it. We've got to tailor it. You know, you've got to understand the sources for courses.
Mm.
And you can't just go in, fuck this, fuck that. You know, when there's elderly people in Chester Water, you know, start off nice and then turn nasty, you know. So... And it's earned me a fortune. I've been going since 86. Then I did the Jonathan Ross show.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went through the roof.
Yeah.
When was that? I watched the video clip. When was the Jonathan Ross show? What was it called again? What was the name of the show?
The Big Talent Show.
Big Talent Show. Yeah.
97. Yeah. And he was great. He was honest to God. I don't know what, some people like him, some people don't.
I think he's great.
Me too.
Mm.
Yeah, they like
him. He's a bit of a character, yeah.
Yeah. But in the morning we went down on the train, and my youngest, Holly, was 6. And she's like, I'm going on the telly. And I was thought, fucking, this is great, you know. So ITV picked us up in a car, took us to the Midland Hotel in London, told us, you know, tomorrow morning you get picked up at 8. And give us the itinerary for the day. So I'm thinking, fucking hell, everything's great now. It's just down to me, you know. So we get to the studio, it's fucking like this place, you know. Got a camera, wires, far bigger, you know, scale. People running everywhere, fucking busy, big flashlights. And our Ollie come over to me, said, Dad, I can't do this. I'm not going. I went, oh, don't fucking say this, man. You know.
Mm.
And she went, I'm not going on. Or so. Anyway, he walks in around about the same time. Pair of jeans on, fucking Aaron jumper. What, girl? How are you? I went, tomorrow, yeah. I've heard a lot about you. He said, hey, you looking forward to it? I said, well, I fucking was till 5 minutes ago. So my daughter pulled out. And he went, what for? I went, she's terrified. Where's she? I went, there. What's her name? I went, Holly. He went, Holly, here. Do you know me? She went, you're Jonathan. I went, yeah. He said, can you draw as good as me? And she went, I don't know. And he went, right, stop, everyone stop. Get some felt tips and bits of paper. And me and Ollie are going to have a competition. And he took it in his fucking dressing room. And they brought the girls, you know, the set girls, set of fucking coloured felt tips. They've shut the door. Well, it must have been about 15 minutes later. They've come out. What? Well, everyone stop. Like that. 2 pieces of paper he went. Right, that's my yacht. and that's Ollie's yacht. Which is the best yacht? They've all gone. Oh, Jonathan, yours is crap. And she's gone, see? and he went, you know, it's a shame you don't want to be with me tonight. She went, no, I'll do it now. And I said to him, you're a fucking genius.
He's here, there's a bit of crack, yeah.
Genius. Yeah. We said, girl, I've got three girls myself. He said, I fucking love kids. I know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
I said, fucking hell, John, that was brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
Was that your first time performing your comedy set on TV?
in a comedy setting, yeah, because all I've had is people shutting the camera in front of it about the disability angle.
Yeah.
This was all about...
Your talent.
Yeah, the talent, not about... Is it Spaz? Is it disabled lad?
Yeah.
Who tells jokes. This is about, this is a fella, fucking doesn't matter what's wrong with him.
Yeah.
This is what he does.
And if you're not funny, they're not going to have you on, like.
Yeah, and he's good at it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was an experience. A fella rang me the following day, a Jewish fella, give me his card, and I went, I want to speak to you tomorrow. So I'm getting all fucking excited, thinking, wow, you know, London management and all that. And when he rang me, he went, you've got to be one of the funniest men I've ever met in my life. And I went, oh, fucking hell. And I'm thinking, come on, talk fucking telephone numbers now, you know. And he went, but you'll never go on a telly as long as you've got a hole in your ass. And I went, why? Fucking deflated, you know. Why? And he said, because these producers, look, you're a young producer. You've got a 6 foot good looking fella, white teeth, nothing wrong with him. Goes out there, does a semi good job, and nobody causes any problems. You got you, short arms, you know, overweight, blah, blah, blah. You go out there and you fuck up. Right? He's the biggest bastard under the sun. He exploited you. He used you for your disability.
Mm.
That's what some people will say.
Mm.
Or take it the other way. You go out there and you fucking storm it and you become a household name. But he's not guaranteed that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So who does he pick? He picks the 6 foot, white teeth, no problems.
Safe bet.
Mm. Yeah. Say he gives himself an easy life. And it's what we would all do.
Mm.
That's not detrimental to me. That's someone in the business making sure he's got a job next week, the week after.
Yeah.
But it's sad. That's the way life is, you know what I mean?
I know.
But that is show business in general, isn't it? It's cutthroat as business itself.
Oh.
Yeah,
and it can be cruel too, particularly when you're putting yourself in the limelight and you're putting yourself out there. Around this period of your life, going on the telly and stuff, how were you feeling on a personal level? Like, because you're really putting yourself out there now for the public to make their comments about you and your appearance and about your disability. How was that approach? How did it go for you?
Just give me that another way, mate. I'm trying to make.
So, for example. Right,
yeah.
So you're on the telly
for
the first time. No, everybody sees you on the comedy act. You know, what kind of feedback did you get? I know there wasn't much social media back then.
Yeah.
Was the feedback from the newspapers, was it positive? Was it good?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely fuck all. Nothing. Other than they had a gig in Scarborough the following Monday. And I got out the car to ask for directions. No fucking sat navs in 1997. And about 10 people went, oh, you were on that, John. And I went, all of it, how do we get there? You know?
Yeah.
And, but there was, now, if we were living in this day and age now, you'd be on fucking GMTV the next day. Mm. The thalidomide lad who was on.
Smashed it last night. Yeah.
And, you know, and you, because of, like, little Jack, you know, I remember him in the frame, the little kid in the frame on BGT, you know, and promote disability, positive promotion of disability, you know.
Mm.
And when you were actually good at it, I reckon I'd have been, we might have been having this chat in my fucking pool in Florida. I might have flew you and fucking over.
Yeah. Was there ever any compensation for thalidomide survivors from the government?
Compensation?
Yeah, like, did you ever get out? Was there any accountability? Like, was there any, like, inquests? Was there anything like that?
Well, where I'm sat, the country I'm sat in, I've got to be very careful how I answer that.
Yeah.
Because it's still us with the actual company that in brought the drug in from Germany, from the drug company Grünenthal. And in 1986, then a lot of people who live in Ireland will remember it. There was the Guinness fraud trial, okay? And Ernest Saunders, who was their chairman at the time, was in prison for 4 years, 5 years for insider dealing, along with three of his colleagues. But for some reason or other, the takeover still took place. So Guinness and distillers merged. And then they merged again with Grand Metropolitan, who do the luggage. And then they merged again with Moët and Chandon, you know, the champagne.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave themselves this fucking highfalutin name called Diageo.
Diageo, you know, yeah.
Diageo PLC. Guinness could have just fucking walked away from us. No question about that. They could have just said, you know what, it's got fuck all to do with us, forget it. But if I'm bluntly honest, they attempted to do that. So I threatened them with blackmail. I had to get involved with footballers like Michael Owen, Prince Nazim Ahmed. I had to threaten worldwide boycotts of Guinness's products. And I bought one share in Guinness. And he used to invite me to their annual general meeting in London. And he'd fucking patronisingly give me a little miniature bottle of fucking Johnny Walker, I'd label my favourite drink, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he'd lead me to my position A, bring me a cup of coffee with a saucer. And then when it was my turn to stand up and talk, I'd say, Mr. Chairman, oh, Mr. Skinner, yes, I'm going to take this company down, sir, you know.
So was Guinness in bed with the company that created the medication?
No, the Guinness took over distillers.
Okay.
In 86. But the four Guinness directors were imprisoned for the inside. I haven't got a clue about insider dealing.
Yeah.
Somehow they queer the fucking the share price,
yeah,
to make it look less attractive so that Guinness can move in and get it.
Yeah.
And they did. And so once Guinness done that, not just a black drink, now Guinness owned Smirnoff.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at UH1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The fucking...
the champagne.
Bailey's, Moët and Chandon. Gordon's gin, you name it, everything behind the bar, wherever you go, they had your own. Right? And, but they had to acquire distillers, and they've just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. They've turned over probably between 4.8 and 10 billion a year, even during COVID.
They recently put the price of the pint of Guinness up as well, by 14 cent or something.
You see, in 1999, when I wrote to what was Guinness then, a fella called Sir Anthony Greener, who was their chairman, told me to fuck off, basically.
So was anybody ever held responsible for what happened to you and thousands of other people?
Never. Legally, never.
Never?
Never legally, no.
But how did they actually get away with putting a medication like that on the market? And was there research and tests done to say that this medication was the cause to your disabilities?
It's never been proven that the money that distillers paid, that it was, honest to God, it was a fucking genial move. And are we all right for time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so your two parents of two kids who've just been born now with deformities like me. So now you're thinking, fucking hell, schooling, all that. Clothes, what do we do? People skitting them, all that. And as the years have gone by, the parents have set up an action group. They've gone to lawyers. What do we do now? Blah, blah, blah. The problem with Distaval, thalidomide, was it didn't damage me. It didn't damage me mum, who was the consumer. Mm. She consumed it. Didn't do it any fucking harm.
And had you more siblings after yourself? And yeah. They were all perfect because she wasn't on them meds.
There was no legal peg to hang your hat on. If you took that drug and it damaged you, you've got a legal peg.
Mm.
If you take that drug and you're carrying another human being, there was no law in place.
Okay.
There was only two laws, the Poisons Act, but it didn't poison anyone.
Mm.
So you can't use that.
Okay.
And the other one, I'll think of it now. So legally, to go to the High Court and say, under Section 21, Paragraph 6 of the Poisons Act, Mrs. Skinner was, you know, poisoned contrary to common law. There was nothing to hang in at all.
Mm.
So it had to be negotiation and campaigning. And if it wasn't for Sir Harold Evans, who was the editor of the Sunday Times, who ran a 12-year campaign to shame distillers, as it was at the time, shame them into doing something. And they gave 505 thalidomide victims £10 million between them. Admittedly, that was back in 1973, which £10 million then was probably like 100 million now, maybe. So, and they set up a trust fund money. Well, I don't get any money directly. Every April, if I'm still alive, I get, now mine's 50,000 a year. Because of what I've done and because of force to get these people who are making fucking billions out of the products that carry on doing it. Get Mr. Guinness fucking. I said to them, look, let's have a fucking, your next advert for Guinness. You don't need an advert. It's on the telly every 5 minutes, fucking big horses going through the sea and all that, and fucking pair of black socks with a white fucking lid on. Don't need that. Just say, like, get fucking 401 of us who were alive, all in a fucking field with a fucking, a drone.
Mm.
And all of us sat in, you know, the ones in wheelchairs and everyone looking up at the camera. Guinness, pure genius, no longer pure greediness.
Mm.
And I would fucking, you know, how much did he spend on advertising Guinness?
Mm.
You wouldn't need to. People would say, I'm well done.
You said something there. You said some of the survivors are in wheelchairs. Does it affect the hands and legs, Gary?
For some people have got no arms and legs.
None.
I'm one of the luckiest ones.
Okay.
I'm one of the fucking very, very lucky ones.
So there's some people up there and they have no arms or legs.
Remember, we met Dr. Austin Carroll?
Yes.
So he's a thalidomide survivor, similar to yourself. He's got the short arms.
Yeah.
But his legs are okay. He's a bit short, but his legs are okay. And he was involved in Paralympics and all this stuff as well, you know, very athletic. He set up a GP outreach service for homeless people in Dublin and lived a very active life, still does. You know, he spoke at the same conference we did. But he taught me, he said that most of the survivors, he said, they've either died by suicide or they're bedbound and they have no quality of life. He said, I'm very, very lucky. Would that be your experience in England as well?
Yeah, but the Southern Ireland victims have been shit on from a great height.
Say that again, girl.
The Southern Ireland victims
have
been shit on from a great height because it wasn't given to them, like, with all due respect to your country, it's small compared to Great Britain, okay? And so, if you imagine, Ireland was supplied directly by the German government and by the German drug company, who literally don't give a flying fuck about one of us, any one of us. They've got a scheme. The Irish victims in, you know, Dublin, Cork, with all that, where they have to write to the drug company and say, my garden's got a big hill and I can't get up it. I need a disabled friendly way into my house. And they've got to pay the first $5,000 of that 12,500. They give them 12,500 euros a year.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So, but because the British government
pushed for it,
they described it in all their literature as a wonder drug.
Yeah.
So every time I write to fucking MPs, I say, you're right, it was a wonder drug. I often look in the window and think, and wonder where my fucking arms went.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder where the fuck did they go, you know?
Yeah.
And it would be, and say, like, that's what you called it. So you gave it to your GPs and he didn't test it.
I know.
And then you gave it a fucking license.
Jeez.
How can you fuck it? Same thing scary with COVID. You know, let's hope, touch wood.
Yeah.
That isn't going to happen and come back and bite us on the ass.
Mm.
But you can't just go giving the public fucking concoctions that's never been tested.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm living fucking proof of that. I'm living proof that you cannot fucking think I'm doing that, you know?
How would you classify your life? No, you seem like a very, very positive man.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And you're blessed, to be honest with you, that you grew up in the surroundings you did, where you had a mother and father, particularly your mother, from what I understand, she was very, very helpful and she pushed you, you know, so you're very lucky. How would you rate your quality of life? I don't know, it's probably a tricky question, but because you don't know what it's like to live without the disability, so how would you rate your quality of life at the moment?
I think I'm a very lucky man. I'm a lucky man on a number of fronts, and I'm unlucky on a lot of fronts too. I'm lucky in so much as that you two lads have got this, you know, here, and no doubt you go to the pub or wherever, you go for a meal. Oh, hey, mate, I've listened to your podcast and all that. So you're not just an ordinary Joe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People know you, okay? And with me, I stand out because of my physical disability. So that's got me noticed, you know? And I'm of the opinion that if you stand out physically, you should also stand out mentally as well, with a positive mental attitude. I think people expect when you're disabled to be a moping, moaning, miserable bastard.
Mm.
You know what I mean? God, the world owes me a fucking living. No, people fucking hate me because I genuinely, when I'm coming after you, I fucking come after you. You know, when I tell you I'm going to fucking turn up, I fucking turn up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know. And they can't frighten me. They can't fucking, you know, threaten you with this and threaten you with that. I mean, I've had fucking police turn up at my door wanting to arrest me because I found out what a fucking High Court judge was up to.
Mm.
Overriding documents from me, you know, within the trust fund. And I've gone, like I said, to the copper went to, when the coppers called me, he said, you said you've threatened direct action. What do you mean by that? I said, I haven't fucking decided yet. I might come and shit do the letterbox. My pistol letterbox, I don't know, my chairs on the step. I said, but when I decide, they'll find out next, won't he?
Mm.
So he went, but I'm scared. I'm weary of the word direct action. So he said, do you wear? And he fucking walked right hands for, you know. And he said, have you got any arms here? I said, fucking no. Of course, fucking not. And he went, any guns? And I went, oh, fuck off with you. And he went, say, you're not being very helpful. So I said, well, yeah, I'm out. The next fucking trick is, have you got any fucking cuffs to fit them?
Mm.
You know, and they're all on body cam and all. I said, get this in on the cam. And then, you know, fucking, they brought five coppers to my house. All because I fucking rumbled them. I know what they're up to.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Mm.
And they don't fucking like it. They don't, honestly.
What's your life like today? Are you gigging? What's your life like today? Are you still doing stand up? Are you doing gigs or talks and shows?
Excuse me. Campaigning wise, I can't see us getting anywhere with anything else now. We're all 62, 63.
Mm.
We've got 401 left now. In the last 12 months, we've lost 22. So the mortality rate, they would argue, is the same as the populace. I would disagree with them. And the fact that they've got £186 million in the trust fund and it's drip feeding us with it.
I know.
Now, when I die, if I drop dead going out of here tonight, that money dies with me. My girlfriend sat in the hotel waiting for me now. She won't get a fucking penny. My two kids won't get a penny. And that goes for everyone. Every thalidomide victim is exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, so
they'll never get through that money.
Yeah, no, we don't even get a penny to bury us. I fought long and hard. I went on, they've got like an internal committee of suckholes. They have like 12 cherry-picked ones of us, like me.
Mm.
How the fuck I got voted on, I do not know, you know. But I didn't expect that. And then I got all kinds of fucking weird, you know, they're saying, hey, you've got to have a course for you to go on about, or you address people, and I went, fuck off. What I mean, and they went, see? And I went, fuck off. You when it needs fucking saying, it gets said.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's ladies in the room and all that, so I don't give a fuck. You know, we're having an in-house meeting about something that I'm fucking really passionate about.
Yeah.
And something that you have lived experience as well around, which is very important.
Sometimes the people like that, they don't like the directness of working class people. And the language we use, don't they like to dance around, beat around the bush and be very nice? But when you just speak directly, it's intimidating from, you know?
But yeah, you're right, but these people, for some reason or other, I can't get it through to them that how badly they've been damaged.
Mm.
And you can imagine a lot of these kids, you know,
yeah.
62, 63 now, they... getting 40, 50k a year. Just don't want to rock that boat.
Yeah.
They're scared to rock that boat. And there are little whispers about, well, you know.
Mm.
No. Be the biggest own goal he ever scored.
Mm.
To take fucking money off people that have been getting for 62 fucking years.
Yeah. And are you still doing comedy outside of the activism?
Loads. Yeah. It's certainly took the knock since
COVID.
It's took the knock since COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's getting that busy this year, such what, yeah. Because football, cricket, snooker, rugby, fucking golf.
Mm.
Everyone's got to put charity shows on to raise money for the teams to keep going.
Yeah.
So there will be more working because we've all been unable to have them certification for 2.5-3 years. Then it should become more planning.
And are you very passionate about the gig? And is this something that you really enjoy and you love doing?
Yeah. No, I was just thinking there while we were talking, the Oasis brothers.
Yeah, Noel and Liam.
They were massive, you know, they done me a massive favour. Indirectly, without even fucking knowing, they done me the favour, you know. Because Mike Summerby, that used to play for Man City.
Yeah.
He was in Escape to Victory with Pelly, you know, the film.
Yeah.
And Summerby's two biggest clients are Noel and Liam Gallagher. So when we pulled the con off with Diageo, he got Liam Gallagher to ring me. Liam Gallagher said, you know, what do you want? Like, so I went, I said, look, I want to raise a boycott. Fuck off, we can't fucking do that. He said, I might as well chop our fucking bollocks off. So I said, well, would you blag it? He went, fucking blag anyone. Yeah. He said, but if it gets heavy, we're fucking out. I said, okay, I understand, yeah. So next thing is, I've rang Diageo, spoke to the chairman, and I'd sent him all the statements from Prince Nazim Ahmed, Paul Ince, Jamie Redner, Michael Owen, all them. Please don't buy these products, you know. And he rang me back and he said, you might have these would-be all-stars in your back pocket, he said, but we also have friends in high places. So in other words, they don't scare me. So I said, but these fucking two must. Noel and Liam Gallagher.
So were you in communication with somebody from Diageo at this time? Were you communicating with somebody from Diageo at this time?
The chairman.
The chairman?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he turned around and he said, where did they come to me? So I said, well, you might have noticed that the Glazer family have just recently taken over at Manchester United. And I said, and these two are very big Manchester City fans and are passionate about their football club. And their football club isn't doing very well at the moment. I said, now, it could be that Noel and Liam, who are billionaire rock stars, might fancy throwing a few quid at their new, you know, incest.
Yeah.
And that's why we're calling a press conference on Friday night at the City Stadium.
Main Road.
Yeah. So where does this affect us? I said, well, but when we go live, I said, you're very privileged. You're the only one I'm telling about this press conference. I said, because when the cameras are all turned up, Fox, CBS, BBC, ITV, Sky, and the cameras are all rolling live, and Noel and Liam Gallagher are sat there surrounded by thalidomide victims, and they all think in the media, what the fuck are all these kids doing here, all these thalidomide kids? And when do you think it's going to be announcing a takeover of Man City? And they say live, it's not about to take over. It's about launching a boycott until these people are properly compensated. And he went, you bastard. I said, now you've got the script. I said, so it's 148 million. I don't care how you do it, but you're going to fucking do it. And he went, we can't do a figure like that all at once. We'll have to have an extra special meeting. I said, don't care how you do it, fucking ring me and let me know. The press conference goes ahead at 5:30 Friday night. And he said, why 5:30 Friday night? I said, because 5:30 Friday night here is 12:30 in the States. So you can imagine how big a viewing audience will be watching. And you know what they're like in the States, going live. Okay, he said, I'll call you back. That was at 4:00 in the afternoon. He rang back at fucking 11:30 at night. Them fellas don't wait them fucking hours. You've got your 148 million. But we're doing the stage payments. As I said to you before, I don't give a fuck how you do it. You're going to fucking do it.
That's how the money came.
Yeah. So that was how we got that one. And they signed a deal now for life. So that money comes in every year at 14 million a year now. And they've extended it, so we're getting even more than that now.
So how much you get? 50,000 a year?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just to help you to survive and to get by. Well,
yeah.
Do you know what?
I'm lucky. I'm a lawyer by day.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you still working as a lawyer?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I've got my day job, my comedy job, and my thalidomide money.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
People without disabilities wouldn't have three jobs.
I know. Yeah.
You know,
I know.
Like, it's very obvious that you have a physical disability from our time with you, you know, and like to be working three jobs, you know, and to doing and being an advocate as well for people who have the same disability for you and yourself. That's.
And you're after,
an inspiration.
And to live the life you've lived.
Give yourself credit. Do you give yourself any credit for what you do and for what you've done for everybody else? Do you know the reason I'm not saying thalidomide is because I probably can't pronounce it. So that's why you're not saying it.
That's got to be the best Irish joke ever. The reason why I'm not saying thalidomide is because I can't fucking pronounce it.
But fair play to you. I just want to credit you for that.
After that, me and Nicky Tomlinson done the government in then for 26.4 million because we wanted them to do what they had all done. I said, hang on a minute. There's three culprits in this, right? There's the manufacturer, the Germans. There's the distributor, the government. Right? The Agio distillers, and there's also the fucking the bastards that gave it a license and didn't test it.
Yeah.
So at the time, the end of the last Labour government, Mike O'Brien, QC MP, was the health secretary. So Ricky Tomlinson said to me, right, where's his constituency? I said, he's in Leicester South. So we said, okay, you go down the House of Commons, arrange to meet him, and you fucking tell him that if they don't mirror image what the Agio have done, me and you will come and stand against him in his back garden on the lead up to a general election, and we'll call ourselves the No Arms, No Legs, My Arse Party. You know, because it's under royal family, he said, my ass.
Yeah.
And I went down to London, fucking grabbed him, and he went, get your fucking hands off me. You know that big room where you see the reporters fucking stopping people? And I said to him, listen, mate, I've had fucking 50-odd years of someone else wiping my ass. And it's not another fucking day goes by where it's going to happen, and I'm not going to get compensated properly by you. Not you directly, but this government. You fucking actually gave it a license without testing it. We're listening and we're doing all we can. I said, well, fucking listen a little bit louder, eh? I said, because I won't give up. I'll be on your doorstep and I'll be coming with Ricky and I'll be coming with a fucking gang of others. I'll take you down, mate, you know. Anyway, that was in November. Fucked off to Florida in January. It was the lads fucking on the air fucking night in the house in the villa. We'd only just got to fucking bed. 2:00, 3:00 in the morning. Fucking phones going like fucking mad. Who the fuck's this? Who's Bates this thing? And who give the fucking number out, you know? And then Jimmy Hutchin got up and answered the phone. Who? Radio 5 Live. Radio 2. BBC Radio Merseyside. Well, can we speak to Gary? He's in a fucking coma. He's in the next room. What is it? The governments have just agreed to pay $26.4 million.
Nice one.
And like fucking made up, so.
Was that in a lump sum or is that staggered?
Well, they wanted to get away with that and then we said, no, well done. Well done, it's a fucking start, okay. Now that 26.4 will make up for the 1 year you haven't paid. We do this every year now.
Every year they give it?
Yeah.
26?
They give us 26. So I said, okay, we'll let you off for the other years.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, because we can't go backwards.
Yeah.
But what we will do, we'll take that 26.4 and say, thank you very much.
Yeah.
But from now on, the actual will pay us 40 and you pay us 12.6.
Okay.
Well, out of that, I get another 30K.
Jesus. Fuck.
And everyone else gets that.
Yeah.
Now, that's because you've got to see a route from A to B.
Yeah.
And I don't like doing this. I don't like doing this to people, but they don't mind hiding behind draconian laws that says that I can't get at them legally.
But you know what? If people like you don't start doing what you're after doing to the governments and the Agio, they'll just keep getting away with it then. Yeah. They'll just keep doing the same stuff to people because they know people won't stand up. And if it's after taking somebody, I know somebody like yourself with your own disability, they take a stand against these corporations and governments. You know, you're putting the rest of us to shame, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
They're making billions.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking billions. So, but it had to be done.
Yeah. But it takes a lot of determination as well. And like what Timmy was talking a while ago, you know, like you've had the challenges in your life, but you've lived amazing life as well, you know, with stories with, you know, the Oasis and Bill Shankly and all these people, you know, you've lived you still live a great life, you know, but it's a.
Paul just showed a rug there that you have a pilot's license as well to drive a plane.
Flying a plane, yeah.
Go ahead. Quickly, tell us a little bit. Have you got a plane?
Sent them the footage. This thing, we're sending you the footage and put. So what can't speak can't lie. So you know what I mean? Just put the footage in. You got all the footage there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's I'm very proud of what I've done, you know what I mean? Yeah. Very, very proud of what I've done. And keep doing it.
Yeah. So you should be.
Do you know if people want to book you for a show or a gig or an event to have coming up? How did they do it?
Well, I think that my best tool in my armory is the motivational side of things. Where you get no disrespect to the people I'm going to mention now.
Yeah.
So then I'll find who climbs a fucking mountain. You know, Kelly Holmes, who runs around the block quicker than me and you. Dame Kelly Holmes, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all on 10,000 a gig. And they've all been born privileged, gifted, you know. So they come to the school or they come to the college and they say, well, I've a dame now and I've fucking done this, done the other. Well, very commendable, great.
Mm.
But yeah, have a listen to this fella. He's nowhere near as dear as them. He's come through it, you know, from the very beginning. He's seen the pitfalls. He's seen how big Beach's Brook is. And he's brought a stepladder and got over it.
Yeah.
Didn't jump it. But he got over it. He found a way of getting over it. And if he can do things, what can you do? You can't sit in front of me as a pupil or a student and say, I can't do that, because I'd say to you, well, you're a fucking failure. If you think that's difficult, have a look at me. Have a look at what I've done. And all it is getting your head down mentally, a route from A to B. And it doesn't have to be a straight road. Yeah. Maybe as crooked as hell, but we've got to get to B.
Yeah.
And there's no option. We've got to get to B. How we get there, that's another matter.
Are you on social media?
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay. We link your social media in the description. So if people want to say hi or book you for an event, they can.
But, absolutely.
Thanks for your time. It's lovely speaking to you.
Yeah.
Likewise, lads. And yeah, so look, you live in a lovely place, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yeah. You do. And I love the non-uniformity, the housing.
Yeah.
You know, the houses are beautiful. It's a bit like Germany.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's clean. It's like, and.
Yeah.
You live in a privileged place, apparently.
Yeah.
You only have to wait an hour for the fucking ambulance here.
The houses here might be nice, but we don't have enough of them. But the housing crisis is another podcast.
Yeah.
But if we're ever coming to Liverpool, we give you a shout.
Right. You please do.
We will, yeah. We will, yeah.
Do.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
And to everyone out there listening, thanks very much for letting me into your living room. I'm a scouser, so check everything's there when I've gone.
It's been a pleasure, Gary.
And thank you so much for
being here
and joining us. And we wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you. And can I just reassure people, when I get excited and I'm not on live telly, I swear to Allah. But when I come to your venue, you won't get one swear word out of me, honestly. I put it together. It's a really chamfered, good show. And it just showed people how I've achieved what I've achieved. Yeah. So, don't let me language put you off, and I apologise to any elderly people out there who've had the heart attack while you've been listening.
Good place. Thanks, Gary.
See everybody next week. God bless.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.